This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been a good spring so far. Obviously, I tell myself at the beginning of every season, you know, things are going to happen. You know, that's the nature of this marathon is unexpected things are going to happen, both good and bad. You know, guys are going to outperform expectations. Guys are going to underperform. You know, this is the marathon. But I feel really good about the depth we have on this team. I think we're a much deeper and more talented team than we were a year ago. And so I'm excited to get started. But like I said, I always try to remind myself that things happen. Yeah. Things are going to happen that are unexpected, and it's our job to react to those appropriately. But I'm excited. Like I said, I think we're deeper and more talented, and we got a really good test early. You know, you look at our schedule early, not just these two games in Tokyo, but in general, we have a really hard early season schedule. We're going to be tested early, and I hope we respond well.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
As we broadcast live through the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers, we are through them because we are at Wings and Rings today to celebrate opening day on the South Side. We have a crowd. They're already cheering. We keep that energy up for the 3:10 first pitch. Guys, what you do in between now and then is up to you. Come by and enjoy an ice-cold Yingling before the game, brought to you by Yingling. Yingling, America's oldest brewery. Marshall Harris, we just heard Jed Hoyer. That was during the Tokyo series. We talked a lot, filling in for the afternoon show yesterday for Spiegel and Holmes, about part one of the Q&A that came out from John Greenberg of The Athletic with Jed Hoyer. He used the phrase, we are going to have to outperform expectations to make the playoffs. He did qualify it by saying the teams that don't have to are probably teams like the Dodgers. We know the Dodgers are in a class of their own. But part two came out today, and he does qualify the comments a little bit more. The pulled quote in the headline says, expecting young players to take a step forward. I don't think anyone is in disagreement when it comes to that aspect of this.
No, I definitely think when you look at where we are and how we got here and understanding why the Pecota projections and everybody else expects certain things to happen for the Cubs this year. You can start with Pete Crow Armstrong. It begins with him, even if the lineup does not. I think he talks about it in a way where he helps to further give context to what he was saying, because I know our initial reaction to hear him for the second straight season talk about guys needing to outperform the expectation for them. That's not good. You should put together a team that performs at the level you expect, and that's how you get to the playoffs. That should be the formula. So for him to hammer home, they need to outperform what we expect of them is kind of crazy, except for now he's talking about young players who obviously don't have as big and long resumes on the back of their baseball cards as some of these veterans. I'll give you the quote because John Greenberg asked him, he said, you have a lower payroll than last year. You're relying on a rookie at third base right now. You've got a second-year guy, MPCA, in center. You trust his defense, but his offense, you're not sure about. You have Michael Bush at first. He says there's a little bit of volatility there with these young players at important positions, and his answer is interesting because he says, I probably look at it as upside, not volatility. I think when you talk about beating projections or overperformance, it usually comes with young players. Guys entering those second and third years where they have a chance to take a big step forward. If we're going to get to a sort of 75th percentile or above outcome on this season, I think you're going to look back at some of the significant grouping of these young players you just mentioned. Pete, Michael Bush, Matt Shaw, Ben Brown. I think you're going to see some of these young players take a step forward. And you know what? Jed Hoyer is absolutely right. They will have to take a step forward if they want to go to the playoffs. They can't have Matt Shaw come in and be a guy who bats 200 and has an OPS under 700 and plays not up to snuff defense. He doesn't have to be a gold glove third baseman, but he's got to make the routine plays.
The problem, too, is the Cubs are so hungry and so in need of power that you want everybody to hit a home run. You want everybody to hit more than they did. Three hits against Yamamoto in Japan, I get it. You know, I get that that's going to happen, right? Three hits total as a team in that game. They end up with eight in game two. As Craig Counsell famously said, they had six singles and the Dodgers had six home runs. That's a good example of a contrast you're seeing. When we talk about the need for the offense, it's not just getting on base. It's not just walking. We know they can do that. It's the extra base hits. It's needing that extra power. We love what we've seen out of Dansby Swanson, especially for the past few weeks. And Greenberg asked him about that as well. What about Dansby Swanson? He had that surgery after last season. I don't know if that was a surprise to you, but he didn't hit like you had expect him to last season, and that probably had a big effect on your year. Hoyer says he was banged up early for sure. He got better. I think his second half was better than his first half, certainly. But yeah, he was definitely feeling it last year, and you know that affected his offense. To his credit, he still played great defense and was a valuable player for us. But the first half wasn't up to his standards, and we were a little bit surprised at the end of the year when he decided to have surgery. We were a little bit surprised. That's about as much as you're ever going to hear a GM say. He also said, but that also told us a lot about him, the fact that he kind of grinded through it. I think that's something that we knew about Dansby, was that he takes his responsibility seriously. He wants to be out there. But in the case of what we saw last season, was it to a fault? You know, now that even we're seeing more out of him this year with the bat, was it to a fault? Did he think that his defense could at least do something more for the team if he's out there? I could see why a player wants to put that pressure on himself.
Listen, here's what we know about Dansby Swanson. He likes to play 162. How do I know this? He's done it in a major league career at a time when guys aren't really playing 162 anymore. Now, he's a little bit older now. You hit those 30s, your body doesn't react the same to doing everyday athletic activity as most people in real life can tell you, whether you're a professional athlete or not. For him, I think why they were surprised is because they figured if he needed surgery, he would just get the surgery to get back completely healthy. The fact that he was able to gut it out tells us that they didn't know how bad it really was until he asked, hey, I got to get the surgery.
Yeah.
And now he looks like a different ball player this year than he did last year. And I think that's a good thing for everybody involved, because if he can have the type of season they paid him to have with that big contract, I think everything's going to be all right. And he's one example of several veterans. I don't need guys who hit 40 home runs, because I look at the track record. They don't have guys who hit 40 home runs. But if everybody can hit 20, and then the guys that you need to can hit 25 to 30, you're going to be okay. Looking up and down that lineup, everybody should be able to put up 20 home runs. Except for maybe Nico Hornet.
At least. And you expect Kyle Tucker to put up 30.
Yeah. And so
I do.
if that's the case, if guys come up short and they're only hitting 15, 18 home runs and they're not getting to 35-plus doubles, then you have a problem. But it does come down to what you said before, the slug of it all. You can get guys on base. You can walk. We saw that in the Tokyo series. But if you don't have guys who can pop it out or at least hit a three-run double, you're going to be in trouble in a lot of these games you face, not necessarily against the bad teams, but against the upper tier or even – in their case, the Milwaukee Brewers within your own division.
It's just painful to think about how many times I've talked about runners in scoring position.
Well, that's a
painful
thing.
We wanted to let you know as well, this is big. Jed Hoyer will be on with Spiegel and Holmes at 5:15 today. 5:15 with Spiegel and Holmes. They are live from Circa in Las Vegas. So I don't think they got Jed out there. I think Jed's probably in Arizona or Chicago, one of the two. But Jed is on at 5:15, so you won't want to miss that. That's later today as we continue our coverage of opening day here on the South Side as well.
Does it feel like opening day? It does not feel like opening day to me. Well, and maybe that's because we already dealt with the Cubs over in Tokyo and waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning to watch them.
Yeah, and even yesterday we got texts on the text line saying, oh, it's Cubs opening day tomorrow. It's not, actually. It's domestic opening day. It's one of their four in a series. Sacramento opening day is what I'm curious about when you talk about getting weird. There's another quote that I want to bring up from this as well. Greenberg asked him, this is your fifth year running the Cubs since Theo Epstein left. You had to build up the farm system and trade away most of the remaining guys from 2016. How do you think you and Carter Hawkins and everyone else has done putting the team in a better position? He says everyone has a set of challenges they're facing. I think the challenge for me taking over was that Theo left a year early. There was a lot of questions about, remember, what they were going to do with that money that Theo had walked away from. Like, were they going to reinvest that in the team? And it says, and in part because he knew that we needed a reset, and he was sort of giving me a chance to do that. So that was the first two full years, trying to build up the farm system and sort of get the organization back to health. I think that we've done that with really good young players. Our books are super clean going forward. And the organization is very healthy and in a great position that way. I thought that was very interesting.
Which part was the most interesting? There's a couple of things I picked up from that. The books being super clean going forward, only because we know about the impending work stoppage and trying to figure out, if Kyle Tucker's only here for a year, what's your plan next year? You've already got to be looking ahead. Because it ain't Camp Smith. He doesn't play here anymore.
Oh, man, aren't we watching to see what happens in Houston today? He also mentioned that there's two seasons left in the CBA. And as you get close to the end of the CBA, people do start to think about things a little differently in terms of contracts. And he said, I think that is certainly the case now. I know that that's happening. I think any GM who doesn't acknowledge it is not telling you the whole truth, which I understand.
Or they're really bad at their jobs because you need to be aware.
Well, or maybe they're just not allowed to talk about it as freely. Jed in his last year of his deal, maybe he's a little bit more able to. But when you look at the numbers themselves, when you see the committed years of money based on the data, that indicates to you alone that teams are acting in kind.
Okay, so my curiosity is about not just baseball as a whole, but when you look at the Cubs and the White Sox, don't have to worry about the White Sox. They weren't spending any money anyway. But when you look at the Cubs, if there are just 2 years left before it all shuts down and potentially we lose an entire season, because that's really on the table. The idea that in 2027 there won't be a baseball season, which is crazy, but also very much a real possibility as the owners have to figure out what they want to do. And then after figuring out what they want to do, you can call it super big market versus small market. We know the Cubs are not the super big market. They're just the big market because they don't spend like a super big market. And then after they figure out amongst themselves what they want to do, then they've got to go to the players and try to get a deal done. And I think the salary cap thing is going to be the main holdup slash injection that's going to be rejected by the bodies of MLB players. So that all takes precedent in the macro over the micro of this season and then next season. Because if Kyle Tucker's not here next year, and I don't think any of us expect him to be here, then I don't know, man. I don't know what the plan is next year. I'm excited and curious to find out, though.
Yeah, you know, you bring up a good point. Here we are, hopeful about the Sox future, and we know kind of what we're expecting to see next season based on certain prospects coming up at certain times. I cannot tell you that for the Cubs. I cannot tell you what they're going to do when it comes to either the possibility of extending Kyle Tucker or how you replace that offense. We know what happened when it came to Cody Bellinger, the other, you know, big source of offense for them. No matter how you look at it, relatively speaking, that was the case. So when you consider those two things right there, just not having Bellinger on the team, he goes to the Yankees, you've got Kyle Tucker for 1 year. I can't tell you what the exact plan is, which is wild when you think about it like that.
Guess we'll have to wait and see and talk about it every single day until something is resolved.
Until something is resolved.